Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, welcome to the show. I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if the Warriors are starting to show some cracks, but we begin in the NFL. I made some interesting and arguably regretful decisions in my life based on the philosophy that a lack of responsibilities is the key to my happiness. Responsibilities are a burden, but they often provide us our greatest rewards. I'm not convinced Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray wants the responsibility of being a franchise NFL quarterback. His new ad for Nike is unconvincing. Take a look.
I just love sports. Basketball, baseball, football. As a kid, I did it all. But in my heart, I'm a football player. There's nothing like it. It's what I live for. I've always dreamed of being a professional athlete. But honestly, I want to be the best to ever play the game.
Someone wrote Murray a decent script and he delivered it relatively well. But his actions tell a different story, and that's why his odds to be the number one pick in tonight's NFL draft are slipping. A few days ago, you had to bet $2,500 to win $100 for picking Murray as the top pick. Now you need only bet $280 to win that same $100. The Arizona Republic reported last night that Murray skipped a pre-draft charity event in Nashville. Of the 22 invited prospects, Murray was the lone one to miss the event. Mm. That's an action. It's one that says Murray doesn't want the responsibility of being the face of a franchise or even possibly the face of the NFL. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean Murray is a bad guy. It means he's different. He might be like me. I've avoided responsibility and commitment in my personal life because I wanted to devote most of my energy to my professional life. You can't have everything. Something's gonna get shortchanged. Kyler Murray's personality fits baseball center fielder more than football quarterback. He came off poorly in combine interviews because he's not a natural leader. He's a natural performer. He's someone who doesn't seek the responsibility of leadership. In the NFL, quarterback is a leadership position. It is in college too, but the head coach and offensive coordinator can greatly reduce the leadership burden. In college, it's become common now for all 11 offensive players to stand at the line of scrimmage and look at the sidelines for instructions. In the pros, the players huddle and look to the quarterback. I'm sure Murray is capable of handling the responsibilities of an NFL quarterback, but does he want to? That's the question nagging at the Arizona Cardinals, the team with the top pick in tonight's draft. Sometimes people self-sabotage to avoid things they don't want to do. I knew a man years ago who was in love with a woman, but ended the relationship by trying to date her cousin who lived with her. It's crazy what men will do to avoid responsibility. Skipping charity events and bad combine interviews, that's nothing. All right, joining the desk now is former Pro Bowl defensive back D'Angelo Hall and Fox College football analyst Reggie Bush. Marcellus, I'll start with you. You concerned that Kyler doesn't want to be the face of an NFL franchise?
Slightly.
That's a legitimate concern.
Slightly. Not as concerned as you sound. A lot of people are sounding. Oh, by the way, your boy's a dirty Mac. That ain't, you'll get down like that, brother. Too close for comfort. Kyler Murray, look, I will say this. They beat you up in the measurables throughout this draft process, and when they run out of that steam, they start to beat you up in the immeasurable. So at first it was his size. Oh, where's the tape measure? Where's the tape? Right. Damn it, he's not 5'9", he's 5'10". Okay, let's switch it. Switch lanes. Now we gotta attack him in other ways.
Yep.
Dan Patrick's interview. You know, everyone saw that and he's looking off camera to his father. No person in sports history has ever had the two industries of baseball and football weighing on him like he did in that moment. So I kind of gave him a pass with that. 21 of 22 prospects invited to a charity event and you're the one that doesn't show up, doesn't sound good, but even in that, he has cover. He landed in the city after the event. Now, I understand what you're saying. Who's doing your itinerary? But I also know at least he's not running through Nashville on Broadway Street talking about what it do. And then they got a charity event. So some flags up. I don't want to say bright red, but certainly a little slight concern. What's going on with your responsibilities?
Well, I mean, when you look at Kyler Murray, the player, the athlete, right? Like you just alluded to, he had the option to play two sports, right? On top of that, he won a Heisman Trophy, so everybody is trying to pull this man in a different direction. You just said he landed later than the event happened. I'm glad you said that, because I didn't know that information before you just said it right now, because I also was wondering what was the thing that caused him to miss it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that somehow says that he doesn't want to be the face of a franchise, because in that Nike commercial that we just watched, he said he wants to be the greatest to
you
ever
play
the game.
Got a lot of commercials, Reggie.
I understand.
Yes, you have.
Been doing a lot
but
of
it would be hard for me
they
to
put
believe.
Put words in your mouth.
It would be hard for me to believe that somebody can make me say that without me actually believing it about myself, right? You can never tell. So you can never.
You know write how much money he got on the line right now.
You can never write a script for me and tell me
that check didn't help.
You can't say that. I want to be the greatest to ever play the game without me actually believing in that. Like, there's got to be some truth to
that,
right?
I think they can
right?
map it onto you. Reggie, you coming out of college, yeah, you can say that because we're like, yeah. Damn it, best
I wanted to be the greatest player ever.
Right, but maybe they're mapping it onto him more so that he really feels that authentically.
But can we say this? The same way in which we're saying Kyler's still learning how to be a quarterback, yep. He's learning the kind of pressures that are bestowed upon being the face of an organization.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure he sat back watching Baker Mayfield get all these accolades, all this attention. And Baker's a personality in itself, right?
Yeah.
And so even when Kyler was doing his interviews post-game, you never once saw, like, the energy that you saw in Baker. Mm-hmm. And so for me, he is a baseball player, trained to be a baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
He happens to be a great football player, and he's picking football, but he's still learning. So the same way we're going to say he's learning how to read defenses and he'll continue to get better because now he's devoting all of his time.
Yeah.
He's learning how much attention quarterbacks are or how many directions, I should say, they're being pulled in. And it's definitely different from baseball. He can sit out there in that outfield and be kind of on his island and make plays when he needs to, go high five when he wants to in the dugout. On the football field, it's not like that. It's all day, every day. You're around your buddy. You're with him. You're kind of tied to a string. And so I just tend to think he's learning kind of how to be
a really
good football
question.
Player as well.
That leads to, does he have the right personality to be a quarterback? That's not a terrible insult.
You're right.
He could be a great guy, but he may be meant to be a wide receiver or a center fielder or a shortstop.
What? The big misconception is, and Reggie, you know this, you played with a lot of really good players, offensive players. I'm just saying offensive guys. And Reggie's been in that huddle.
Yeah.
Everyone always wants the quarterback to be the guy.
Yes.
But in every room, in every team, the quarterback is not the guy. I've been a part of teams where the quarterback deferred to the defensive captain or the receiver or the running back.
Well, those teams didn't good.
You're up here with the ringless, damn it.
Yeah, well, Reggie got one.
Yeah.
But
Reggie got one. He played with Drew Brees.
What I would say,
you
though.
You played with Phillip Rivers, right?
I mean, I caught him when they were. No, I ain't played with Phillip. Young Drew. Okay. Baby
Drew.
Yeah,
but what I would say, though, is that when you talk, because none of us know Kyler Murray personally, right?
Yeah.
And so when you listen to the people who do know him personally, his head coach, his teammates, they all say he is a great leader. They all say he loves winning.
I don't think they
his
say
head
that.
Coach.
No.
The
head
coach all. Said, yeah, the all
his
is
head
a little.
Coach, no. We're like,
they he got, said he's got something to learn. He's got a different energy than Baker. He politely.
Did he say he was not a leader? He said
no, he didn't. But he didn't give him the full-throated endorsement of a great leader. He's not going to throw the kid under a
little
bus.
Little tepid.
It was just there was a little energy missing. And again, Kyler Murray's not a bad kid.
Mm-hmm.
But him and his dad, Reggie, when you really understand it, they have worked one-on-one together more so than him with teammates, than with other coaches. He's his father's boy more than he is a great quarterback leader.
Okay, I spoke to Matt Leinart, who got a chance to interview him, because we went through this whole thing when I was at NFL Network. And we were talking about all this stuff about Kyler Murray's not a leader. The GM came out and said Charlie Cashley said had a lot of negative stuff to say about him. So I went to people who knew him, and they all said sing a different tune. It wasn't what Cashley and other people were pushing out there about him, because when you turn on the film, you see he makes the people around him better. You see he loves to win, and he plays every play with extreme passion. And that's really all you can ask for. Does he have everything that you need right? No, he's not a professional. He's a rookie. So like you said, he is still learning.
I was saying that when you say his dad was kind of his one-on-one guy that they worked with, when you're young, I never had a father in the house growing up, but I would imagine the way I am with my son, my son's 17, I'm still his, like, can your coach say that? You do what I say. I played in the league. I know what I'm talking about. But I say all that to say, at some point, Kyler will grow up. He will continue to, he will seek out his father's advice, but I will think he gets more qualified guys around him because now I, meaning Kyler Murray, I'm the product, right? I got to make sure I get the right people around me, whether that's a different quarterback coach, whether that's a guy with his footwork, with his speed, with his flexibility. And so I know he was relying on his father for a lot of this, but part of that is because that's his dad. And as he continues to grow up and become a player and a professional athlete, I would tend to think he seeks that professional advice.
Yeah, and let's not fool ourselves in thinking that you have to be a fully formed leader to succeed in the NFL. Mm-hmm. First of all, Kyler Murray won't be as aloof as one Eli Manning is as a leader. Kyler Murray won't be as, some say, backstabbing as Big Ben as a leader with his issues, right? Kyler Murray won't be caught on camera running from the police like Baker Mayfield as a leader. Mm-hmm. Kyler Murray won't be as arrogant as Aaron Rodgers was as a leader.
I'm not sure about that one.
Well,
other ones are great.
It might be quiet arrogance. It might be silent confidence, but it won't be loud arrogance as he has a baseball mentality. That said, when we try to dig into responsibility, let's use the actions of this man against him rather than the words of others.
Yeah.
When you're in college and someone gave you millions of dollars to play a sport and you said, I'm not leaving, I raised my hand to do what Baker Mayfield did and I want to do it even better and lead this Oklahoma team into national contention, that's responsibility. Like, he had an option in the moment and tapped on that and said, let me go after what I deserve, what I have a passion for. That Nike commercial rings true to me because he had options, but he used his power and his greatest ability of all, choice. Yep. He chose football. That's responsible.
I think his father has done a masterful job of putting him in a great leverage position with both sports. And so I think they've been playing a great poker game. Hmm. And now it's time for Kyler to ante up. And I don't – we had the kid on from Last Chance U, the quarterback from Last Chance U, if y'all ever see that Netflix documentary.
Yeah.
It was light-skinned black kid. I can't call his name right now. But Malik Henry, five-star recruit, went to Florida State first, then ends up at Last Chance U. And I watched all that documentary. And then we had him here on set, Marcellus, and the kid's a baseball player, and his dad wants him to play quarterback.
That's real.
And I could see that was Malik Henry's problem. And Kyler
Henry
had
an attitude.
He had
and marijuana problem, and just he had other issues. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of it was driven like he'd rather play baseball. Everybody's personality isn't fit for all these positions and where football has gone and where the quarterback position is gone. It's such a burden. You're like a mayor of a city. It's completely different now. And if this kid's personality doesn't perfectly fit it, that's not a knock on him.
Right.
That's more like, is this the right? And that's why I think there's questions. We're hours before the draft. Mm. And we're not sure he's
going to Malik played young Pop Warner at my park. So that ain't Kyler Murray. In the most positive ways, they a little different.
We've seen some dry personality quarterbacks win Super Bowl.
Oh.
Without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not worried about this kid.
Hey, guys. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. If you like what you hear, you should take a minute to check out the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast hosted by The Herd's very own Joy Taylor. On the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, you'll tap into a different take on the world of sports. Joy will break down all the biggest stories from the NFL, NBA, culture, in and out of sports, and everything in between. So subscribe now for a weekly episode of Maybe I'm Crazy every Tuesday night on your favorite podcast platform. Now back to the show.
Joining the desk now is Fox Sports NBA analyst Jim Jackson and Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated.
Man.
All right, let's go to a big story in the NBA. Clippers shocked the world again, beating the Warriors in Oakland for the second time. First time. 2016 finals. the Warriors have lost two straight at home in the playoffs, and that's when LeBron and the Cavs beat Golden State.
Say it.
After the game, Steve Kerr was a little testy. We just asked about his team's identity.
What would you say the identity of your club is?
What's the identity of our club? Back-to-back champions? I don't know. Like, we're really good. I mean, we're hanging banners. You know, what's our identity? We play fast. We play defense. I don't know. Maybe we should do an instructional video later, and we'll send it to you.
I like it.
Insecure there.
I wasn't insecure.
Outside of forcing a game six, the Clippers also – I'm sorry. Sixers, question is, do the Warriors still look like a championship team?
Yeah. They still look like a championship team. The problem is – other teams do as well. So we look like champions, but the Houston Rockets look like champions. Milwaukee, this road is not going to be paved. And it's karma for those who have always said Golden State, yeah, man, they've had some great luck in their path to success. Injuries, remember going back in the days, injuries to Blake, Chris Paul. Then you go back to injuries to Kevin Love, Kyrie. And then you look at last year's situation. Oh, Chris Paul goes down. Everybody kept saying, ooh, that's a lucky bunch. They ain't lucky anymore. This year is going to be hard luck. A team that is deep with some dogs is going to be the kryptonite to this team. And our team, we have a ceiling. I'm a Clippers fan. Our team. My Clippers. But I can do my job, which is the objective. We have a ceiling. We don't have the superstar. Mm-hmm. But Houston does. And if they get out of this series, which, you know, we'll see how that plays out, there are deep dogs waiting for this team, and it's going to be a very tough road for this team to go out there and repeat.
Yeah, they're thinner than they've been in years past, but last year they still had their top four guys to average 37 minutes a game, so they rolled out their guys extensively. The problem, as you point out there, is that Houston's kind of lurking, and the Rockets, to me, are a lot like what the Spurs were in 2014. They played against Miami in 2013. Mm-hmm. They thought they had them. They were right there. The ropes were being put up. They were ready to win that championship, and they had that taken away from them. Up and down to Houston a bunch, and the Rockets' mindset is that they thought they had them last year in the playoffs. Then Chris Paul gets hurt, and everything kind of unravels for there. They're going into this series, the most likely series, not only with enough talent to compete with Golden State, but certainly the chip on their shoulder to push them through some of these tough games. And if you're Golden State, you got to really be concerned about the point of attack. I mean, they're getting killed off the dribble by Lou Williams. Mm-hmm. Like, Lou Williams is just penetrating, and not just against Steph Curry. Steph Curry gets a lot of blame, but he's going up against Klay Thompson. He's going up against Andre Iguodala. If you're having problems containing Lou Williams, you are going to have problems with Harden and Chris Paul.
First of all, I want to say congratulations.
Okay.
Thank you. And, oh, now you're going to act like it's
No, no. And then, then later on, maybe I'll treat you to something a little bit later. Yeah, a little bit later.
Hint, hint.
My dog.
But three things. One, give credit to Golden State because they've elevated everyone else to improve their rosters to compete with them. All the other teams in the league kind of modeled after what Golden State their offense, their mindset, how they played, how they shot them, all of these things. So give them credit there. Second, I think it's a little bit different because Houston, I think from the perspective of we're looking at the Clippers and saying, well, there's a chink in the armor with Golden State. But the defensively, I don't think Houston poses the same kind of problems or issues that the Clippers do. It's a different makeup. This is a different kind of a challenge with the Clipper team than it will be against Houston. It'll be a challenge, but it's going to be different because Clippers has something different to prove outside other than Houston. And third, complacency is always there. And I talked about this from the beginning of the year. The biggest thing Golden State had to deal with was complacency.
Yep.
Okay? They figured they can get this game, come in. They never matched the intensity of the team that was about to be closed out. And if you don't do that from the beginning of the game, you're going to have a dogfight, and that's what we saw.
I think that they don't look like a championship team, but not because of a threat in the West. I think that the advantage they're going to have over Houston will be on the sidelines, Steve Kerr versus Mike D'Antoni. He's now facing Doc Rivers and a very motivated organization that's putting together an awesome sales pitch for this offseason. He's going to face Mike D'Antoni. When they get to the East, though, and the NBA Finals, when they have to face Boston or Toronto or Milwaukee, really deep teams. And if you've had to struggle in the West, I think that's where their lack of bench is going to show up. They're going to be more worn out when they get to the NBA Finals than in any of their previous runs, and they're going to face really deep, well-coached teams.
And the East teams that you're talking about are built to play against Golden State. And I don't know if Boston or Toronto did it this way on purpose, but the biggest problems that Golden State have had are against teams that can switch everything. Mm-hmm. And if you're Toronto, you've got two of the best perimeter defenders in the league in Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam. There's a reason that Boston over the last 3 years has basically played Golden State to a standstill in their matchups. They can switch everything, and they can have guys that defend multiple positions. So if Golden State is a little bit more beat up, they're going to be playing teams that are equipped to defend them at a high level.
And and let me say one more thing, because this is Clipper talk, right?
You finna get into Clipper talk.
I'm just going to say this. There's a reason why Steve Kerr's in his feelings, because he's only lost two first-round games in the series ever since he's been there. Mm-hmm. He lost two in
that was also a brutal one. Question. Right? Yeah, what's your identity?
Come on, outside of come forcing on. A game six, we the coming. Clippers also prove to the rest of the NBA that this is a team on the rise. They have a deep bench with Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, right. A championship head coach in Doc Rivers, and their owner has the deepest pockets in the NBA. The Clippers have long been rumored to be the front runners to land Raptor star Kawhi Leonard this summer. But now, with this kind of performance against the Warriors, some have speculated the Clips could be a very attractive destination for Kevin Durant as well. And I believe it. I think it's there. It's Clipper time. I think the Lakers are in a mess. LeBron has jumped on the Titanic, and Steve Ballmer is building basically the perfect organization. He's the richest owner in the NBA, I think
in
the
sports.
Richest owner in sports.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's Lawrence Frank. He ran Doc back to the position where Doc can excel as a coach. Lawrence Frank's doing a great job at the front office, and he has Jerry West, the guy with the Midas touch. It's the perfect – who wouldn't want to play for the Clippers right now other than their Donald Sterling history?
I mean – we could really rename L.A. Clip City, Chip City. I mean, it's a real thing going on right now. Just letting you know. Like, look.
There you go.
In this recruitment of KD, I don't think it's happening in the moment. I think recruiting now, as I see it, from the athletes today, from when we were getting recruited, they make their assessments from distance and afar and with their brain power. You can't show up and then just say, oh, look at this nice billboard of me or this nice video of me. They're so used to being adored everywhere they go that in the moment doesn't matter. It's infrastructure. It's projections. What's this team look like? Assets, resources. And if you make that assessment of all the teams out there, there's not a team trumping the Clippers. So for KD, I think he's already sat back and said, I know what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to go through the process. And you could change me on the fringes potentially, but the core of my thinking has already been made up in my mind. This, they're trying to add syrup to something that is already done, but I think that he knows that the Clippers are second to none in terms of their future.
Well, they built something here culturally I think that people really enjoy and guys want to play for. One, you talked about the ownership. Two, Doc behind the bench, I mean on the bench, as a player's coach, but a winning player's coach that understands what's going on. And the core of the group are young guys that just want to play. They want to play and they want to accomplish something. I'm going to go back to this. It's the right free agent that you bring in because you don't want to disrupt the culture. I don't know if Kimba fits that mold in regards to what Shea Gilgis, his growth as a young point guard.
Right.
It's somebody on the wing you need. KD, for some reason, it opens up the door. But I don't see KD making that move to L.A. I still see it back east a little bit. I'm not saying that the opportunity, he may not look at it differently today than he did earlier in the year. Because this is a totally different Clipper team than what you thought it would be. I'm still edging towards a little bit towards, Kawhi. Mm-hmm. A little bit more.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, but I don't say it eliminates KD. But I'm going to put him below that Kawhi opportunity if it was just me.
You know, the top-tier free agents have often told me that the functionality of an organization is big for them when they get in these meetings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dwayne Wade in 2010, when he took his Knicks meeting, one of the things he said coming out of it was that he didn't feel like the Knicks were ready to win at a high level. Kevin Durant, as we've seen in years past, is influenced by these meetings. He goes into these meetings, whether it's what all those guys did in the Hamptons or Boston bringing Tom Brady. Like, he can be influenced by by what happens in the room. And the Clippers, as you guys mentioned, are going to walk into the room with Doc Rivers, with a deep front office staff, and with Steve Ballmer, who seems to be one of the more likable owners in the NBA. The Knicks, who I think are the top competition here for Kevin Durant, who are they going to walk into the room with? And how are they going to sell Kevin Durant on his future, other than saying, you can bring whoever you want with you. You can take Kyrie Irving or ex-free agent and bring him along with you. I think that's a factor not enough people are talking
about. See, I disagree with that. And I think of all of us, Jimmy, you can understand this. KD is that beautiful woman. I mean, she done heard it all. I mean, she can't go to the grocery store without hearing, all right, what else you got to say? Mm-hmm. If she ain't feeling you, you could be Shakespeare in your poetic attempt, mm-hmm. and it ain't going to work. But if she feeling you, guess what? I think he's feeling the Clippers already. KD's selling his Malibu home, and everyone's like, oh, he definitely ain't going to be in L.A. Y'all ever get to L.A. proper from Malibu?
You better sell
that home.
It's hard to get
there. I'm letting y'all know that he's selling that home potentially to get a little closer to L.A., not farther.
I'll say this, too, about KD, and he seems like this kind of person that in his mind he kind of knows what he wants to do, okay? And that a player of his caliber, I'm not going to use the word sell because you can't really sell him. He knows mm-hmm. what he wants, okay?
Exactly.
He knows exactly what he wants. Now, how he gets there is the question. In regards to another championship, can it be his team in regards to his legacy? What makes most sense post his basketball career? Those are the other intangibles, I think, that a guy now going on the back end of his career, he's still got a long way to go, but looks at it a little bit differently.
Jim, I like your point about KD knowing what he wants, mm-hmm. but I think what Ballmer and Doc Rivers are going to sell is, we know what you want, but we have something even better to offer you. And I say to my lawyers here, I used to eat at Applebee's all the time. Mm-hmm. He took me to Capitol Grill. I ate at Applebee's.
Don't you think, guys, the Knicks can screw this up.
The Knicks can screw this up.
James Dolan can get in the room and screw this up. They've done it in the
past. But I don't think he will with Steve Mills and Perry there now.
He did it with Donnie Walsh.
Hold up, but I think it's a little bit different with these two in the front office, okay, and especially with Fizdale.
It's a different tenor
in New York now compared to how it was in the past.
I never got to my point about the Clippers in terms of what.
I thought you were talking about Applebee's.
No. I'm just going to tell you what they're going to get in the room. What Doc Rivers is going to say is, like, we're the only organization that can offer a superstar real in-game day-to-day rest because we got Lou Williams and Harrell coming off the bench. We've created a culture where guys this good will play the bench mm-hmm. in support of you. You don't have to sit out games. We can actually rest you in games because these two dogs are going to come off the bench and carry the team while y'all chilling.
Good point.
It's an extra sales point. Nobody else can offer that. Who's got two guys like that coming off the bench? Nobody else.
Good point.
That's huge for me.
I'm Jason Whitlock. He is Marcellus Wiley. D'Angelo Hall and Jim Jackson are back. Time to put on our thinking cap. Take a deeper look at a special issue in sports. Darnell, bring out our Columbia grad special cap. He has the highest SAT score of all of us.
And one to look, D'Angelo. Yeah, try to front me out.
He has less common sense than all of us.
Yeah.
All right. Let's return to the NFL draft. Where Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins is expected to be an early first-round pick in tonight's draft. A New Jersey reporter was doing a story on Haskins' preteen years in the Garden State and attempted to set up an interview with Haskins' dad, Dwayne Sr., and that's when things got a little strange. Haskins Sr., who describes himself as having an entertainment background, was skeptical of the motives of the reporter. Here's a brief transcript of Haskins Sr. talking to the reporter about the still unwritten story. It's not about the story. I am the source. I've been doing this for 10 years. The content is faith, family, and football. Every writer I work with basically goes through me with the source. At the end of the day, I want you to know it's about his family, integrity, and my core values. Everyone has to match up with that for me. Mm. I suggest you go to NJ.com and read the full transcript.
Yeah, that part. Yeah.
He's feeling himself.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought about this and wanted to talk to some dads about this. I've thought about the modern sports dad who continues to make more and more news. And I think part of it has to be what's changed from my era and Jim's era is, like, when you produce and develop a son that becomes a commodity at age 20, 21 that's worth millions of dollars, nothing could boost a male ego more than that. I produced and developed something that could potentially be worth $300 million. Mm-hmm. That's got to really play with your mind. And that's why some of these dads sound a bit full of themselves and delusional.
Yeah, great starting point. How it sounds overbearing. It sounds like it's a little too much control. And there is no greater satisfaction in this world than to watch what you created become greater than you in any element, let alone a lottery ticket. I'm just saying if your kid is more educated than you, if your kid just can run faster, you accomplish more in high school, let alone this level, this magnitude, respect. But the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
One of my favorite sayings.
One of my favorite, too, for this reason, too. Uh-huh. Parents today are faced with the impossible dilemma. Impossible dilemma. Do I let my child at 21 go out there into the world and work for you, work with you as an agent, business advisor, lawyer, whatever it may be, and you're just an experienced vulture? Because we've heard all of the horror stories from all of the top athletes. I don't care who you want to talk about. They've been through it, it seems like. Someone got scammed here. Someone got robbed here, taken here, schemed there. Or do I sit here and say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep them, even though I'm over my head, in this pure love-based interest. And I'm inexperienced for this, but you know what? I got their back. And I think that's where the parents are right now. If someone walked up to any of us and told us to run Apple, run us a mega company, a mega corporation, we'll be over our heads. But our intentions, our spirits, our interests will be there. He sounds like that. He just is over his head with good intentions.
See, some of what Mr. Haskins Sr. is doing too is he's living through his son. And a lot of parents fall victim to this. It can happen as young as little league, high school ball. You see the parents tend to care a little more than the kids do at certain points of their careers. And then it's things that doesn't necessarily bother the kid that I've seen firsthand that the parent feels like, oh, I gotta go step to my son's defense or daughter's defense. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem comes. We as parents, we have the luxury of having lived that life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so for me, it's not important for me for my son to be a first round draft pick or make these millions and help get us out of, you know, the situations we were in growing up, the hard times and hardships. I was fortunate enough and blessed enough to kind of help do that for our family. And so for him, all I want to raise now is a great kid, great son, a great man, a person who knows right from wrong, who treats people the way they should be treated, and who has some kind of ability to want to be something in life. And so, you know, we're extremely blessed because we don't have, I mean, because I could only imagine had I never made it, had I been that guy in high school who was just almost there, almost good enough, and here my son here is this four-star player, man, I'd be going crazy right now. I wouldn't be here doing this show. I'd be all over top of him. Right, hey, look, man, you got to get that footwork done now. Right. You got to get this work done.
Right.
Because it is a business. It's a business to a lot of these families because they don't know, they didn't know where the next meal was coming from in certain situations. I'm not saying this happens with the Haskins family because I don't know them firsthand. But a lot of parents fall victim to that, wanting to live through their sons.
Let's make a duel here because it goes both sides. Where families that maybe don't have kind of count this meal ticket, but then there are families that do have that still want to navigate and be hands-on with their child. And I get it. But, you know, parents have always been in this situation. They just didn't have a voice at the time, okay? I've seen it with my son even before where it's been a father who kind of pushed the button a little bit, but you didn't have the outlet because you always, at that particular time, it was status quo. You got an agent, you got a business manager, kind of let them handle it. And if something happened, they came in on the back end. In today's world, what we see is parents taking initiative early on, right or wrong, of my child's career. I want to be there in the forefront because I know I have their back no matter what. It's not about the money. Sometimes it is, but I have their back. And their trust issues because of what you said, Marcellus, of the scams and things where athletes got taken advantage of, parents now step up. My issue is this. What you said, when the parent wants it more than the child, okay? You see it so much. When I grew up with my son with AAU, I used to sit in the stands, man, and listen to these parents. Mm-hmm. It was not just fathers, mothers.
Yeah.
unbelievable what these parents did. It was out of the love for their child, but it was also like they were missing something in their life and they wanted their child to kind of fill that void.
Yeah.
And that's my issue when you do that, okay? Mm. Make it the purity of the child, not for something that you missed.
Marcel, I want to circle back to you because you're an L.A. guy. And I see all of this, and it's not surprising me that Dwayne Haskins Sr. in the entertainment industry.
Mm.
And so all that's really happened is that the values of Hollywood have moved over to sports because there's just as much money this as being a movie star.
Right. Yes.
And so we're used to this in Hollywood, the helicopter parents managing their kids' careers, and then later you read 20 years later there's this financial split and they done sued each other and blah, blah. I just think that's all descended upon football, basketball, baseball. It's no different than Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, the dynamics are exactly the same. Great point. It's crazy because the barriers of entry, and this is not, let's not get too deep, even though we're in thinking cap, but the barriers of entry to become a parent are very low if you think about it. like let's just be real.
Stiff win.
Yeah. Right.
Go through adolescence and do what you do, and you're a parent. Like, barriers of entry. But now we're talking about, oh, you have something of value, and maybe you're not qualified to actually be in control and the authority of that value. Yeah, it's great taking them to school. Yeah, it's great taking them to practices. Yeah, it's great supporting them. Go Johnny. But now it has turned into something bigger than what you're qualified for.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing now are all the antennas of that. There are very few Archie Mannings, Calvin Hills, us up here that's going to be sitting there saying, you're second generation. You're used to this. Your dinner table conversations, you will discuss what a CPA is at eight.
Yeah.
I didn't know what a CPA was until I hired one. I didn't know. And I'm sitting there. This is a whole different world. So when I look at people like this, who do you trust? Because you have to delegate that responsibility. But then they see all of the issues that comes with it, so they don't know which
way
it's
going. Let me ask you a question. Pose it over here. Just what we know now, what do you think the percentage is that parents should participate in the process with their child, male or female, when they go through this process of going to the next level of pro sports? What percentage? Because you want your parents to be involved, but at what percentage?
I mean, Jim, for me, it's not even a percent. Mm. Just kind of like Marcella said, if you don't have any experience in the realm that you're trying to put your two cents into, maybe that's not the best thing for your child. Mm. And so if you do, like hearing Mr. Haskins has an entertainment background, I've never once heard that prior to reading this article. And so I don't think he's qualified. And I'm pretty sure Dwayne doesn't know that his dad's out here doing, you know, or...
Well, he knows now.
The way we read the article, exactly. The way we read the article, it was kind of like, you know, the reporter was simply trying to get some quotes.
Right.
His dad was just very standoffish. Like, hey, look, I don't want you talking to nobody to be a source besides me. And the guy was like, well, sir, you don't even know who my sources are to say who's legitimate and who's not. Doesn't matter. I'm the only source. That's a problem.
Let me say this, throw it out there for y'all to discuss, because y'all are the parents. The one thing I think parents always want to do, whether their kid is 1 year old or, in my case, 51 years old, your parents always want to be an asset to you. Always.
Yes.
They want that feeling of like, I'm helping you along in that journey.
Yes.
And it's, my mother loves the death out of me. She has no experience in the media. But she wants to talk about my show every day.
She wants
to tell me who so-and-so said this, they shouldn't have said that. What, you know what, you need to tell your boss X, Y, and Z. That's just the love of a parent.
Let me talk about that, man. When you cut that from your parents in the structure and the parental role, when they lose that lifeline of that input, like they actually are still navigating your road and experiences, it feels like a death to them. And it really
feels... What's their purpose?
Yeah, their purpose, like, just got cut. That's why empty nesters feel like, what happened? My kid's not here every day. I don't have control input. And they feel that way, and especially if you can't escape that your child is now a megastar, you know that everyone's talking to him. And Mr. Haskins, once again, with good intention, is trying to say, I've been through whatever level of this process, and I'm trying to control the narrative. But I want to talk to Mr. Haskins. In simple, you never worry about silencing the noise. You just strengthen the filter. You got to protect your kid by talking to your kid. And then if your kid's mind's right, I don't care where he goes, mm-hmm. he's going to know which way is up.
My mother does the same thing. She talked to me about NBA, calls me like, what show you on, what you doing, you look good, you didn't do that. My mother does it all the time. And having my son go through the process of AAU, high school, then to college, and now pursuing his professional career, I'm always caution and say, I can't think for other parents, okay? They haven't been through what I went through. I haven't been through what they've been through. They don't think like me. But I caution parents to say this. Get involved with your child, okay? Know everything that you can know. Support them, but don't be overbearing, okay? Because if you do that, eventually you're gonna run your child away. And we see it in some situations. So it's like we want to be involved. We want to make sure that our child is taken care of and looked after, but it does get to a point where it can be too overbearing, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fine line between kind of giving your child just enough and just hovering so much. And you talk about it, you know, there's a lot of kids get burnt out on their sports. It's not necessarily, or you hear of a lot of kids getting burnt out on their sport. It's not necessarily the sport itself that burns them out. It's the demands of the parent that, hey, we got to go to this. We got to go do that. Because every parent kind of feels like, hey, if you're going to do it, got to be great at it, right? So it's time after time because it is an investment for them. And they're trying to see, reap the benefits of that investment at the end of the day. And yes, it's from a place of love. My mom's the same way. It was so funny hearing y'all talk about it. Literally, text after right. phone call. Hey, yep. You should have did this. Hey, that was a great show. Da-da-da-da. What time you on? So that's just how parents are. And I mean, that's how I'm going to be. I'm trying to kind of let him figure it out on his own, but it's tough sometimes. I don't have the, I guess, I'm not the parent who wants, look, do this because I did it. I'm like, look, be you. Like, don't do it because I did it.
Here's the danger, and we got very little time here, but hopefully we can squeeze in a comment from her. The danger, I think, that happens with a lot of parents, they want to be an asset, and then they get fearful of the outsiders that they didn't know who become assets in your life.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, are they closer to them than me?
Than me, yep.
And again, the strategy I've taken with my mother is like, I make the people that I make close to me, close to her.
Oh, wow.
I make them all part of the family.
Oh, man, I heard stories. Me in the locker room and cats are like, you pay your agent 3%? Yeah, I pay my agent 3%. How much you give your mama a month? Less than 3%, and then the beef gets on because mama finds out, oh, you paying this dude you just met last week
more than you hooking me up? I don't understand, though. That's the contract, mama. That's the contract, mama. It ain't because I want to pay him that.
Because I got you. I would say your point, too, laying the foundation with your child to be able to evaluate and make the right decisions, best thing as a parent that we can do.
Yeah.
I mean, because at the end of the day, they got to make decisions. But as parents, we got to walk them through these certain steps as they mature and then at some point kind of let them go. But it's incumbent upon us as parents to lay that foundation that they, no matter which way they travel, they come back to that foundation. And that's what I see with my son right now.
Marcellus, it's time for some antisocial.
Time. Guess who? Ooh.
Darnell.
Nuts.
Through the 23s, Darnell.
Yes, sir. We're going to start with the Lakers, whose first year with LeBron has been nothing short of disappointing. Yesterday, he posted a video denying reports that his relationship with the organization was rocky. And then, just a few hours ago, Magic put out a very random tweet saying, the truth will always come to light. Everyone online trying to figure out what Magic was talking about.
But God, I'm about the truth.
What are you guys reading to this?
I won't deny you.
Magic is talking about them, that backstabbing. I know what that's it. Them emails.
No question.
Yeah. I'm reading the emails. And Jeannie already called out her brother before. You see what I did to my brother? And Steve Ballmer caught that. She kind of lax with them emails, man. She got to check all the line items. So, I think Magic just talking about how I really got
out of here. Before you hit send, make sure you check to see what's going on. And Magic is all about it. It's like, listen, this is what's been going on. I really can't say it, but it will come out.
Yeah.
That behind the scenes, you really didn't have my back speaking about Jeannie. You didn't say anything negative, but you didn't have my back.
Toxic.
That's toxic.
That's toxic.
That is toxic, man. I agree with you 100%. I think he's just basically saying, like, the truth at some point is going to end up
coming out. What about when we were on hair? Yeah. We were all talking about LeBron's
hair. We was talking about LeBron's hair. Because he had a wave cap on. He had a wave cap on.
You said why?
Well, something. If you don't got no waves, then you want a wave cap.
What do you mean? If you ain't got no hair, what you got a wave cap on?
Hold on. Listen, it's some dudes that got baldies now that rock a wave cap. They do it for the look.
Why?
They do it for the look.
For the wave cap line?
No, they do it. They do it for the look. They tie it up in the back, walk around, and they got a
baldie. Jimmy, stop looking out.
I'm not saying that it's him, but dude's doing LeBron this for the look.
You watch him doing the game, he do the swipe and pat. He swipe right here with a towel, and then he pat up top. Like, don't you touch up here. Don't you mess with that. It's thinning.
That's thin, bro.
One more. Next.
You work too hard. Moving on to the NFL, former Steeler Ryan Clark has been critical of Tony O'Brien on ESPN for a few years now.
Man.
He and Brown have voiced their differences on social media, but today Brown took it to a whole nother level, tweeting out, "Bro, stop mentioning my name. I know it gets you clout. Keep that same analysis energy. Next time we meet, it's on site, and I ain't gonna spare you." Does it sound like a threat to you?
Ooh, did it? That's fighting words right there.
Yeah, verbal.
That's fighting words right there.
Like, we about to just spit it out.
Who's your boy that got in the fight in Vegas?
In Vegas?
Remember, it was from the
Damn, Reggie, do your prep. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I'm trying to think about when they got in the
from
fight
the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Look, man. I don't know this is this is ridiculous on AB's part.
Yeah.
He can cut this out, man.
Yeah, he is. I've been Ryan Clark, too, with Draymond. Draymond, my boy, I thought. But then I'm critical of him. Then it's like, you meet me, bro, smoke. I'm like, I'm not going to ever meet you. We not smoking. It is legal, but we not smoking. And I defend Antonio in this situation almost wholeheartedly. But Antonio, don't do this.
Why don't they just put some gloves on and get in the cage?
Nobody want to do that.
But if they talking about it, he talking about it on site. I got you.
But
I'm saying, AB, like, I got you on site.
Ain't nobody fighting him. They never go through with that.
But I'm just saying, let's just put it out.
Soulja Boy is supposed to fight. Soulja Boy is supposed to be fighting.
And listen, man, when you got a name called Soulja Boy, you got issues already.
Every rap beef, every one of these little beefs, Twitter beefs, just hop in the ring.
Man, hell.
Do it fair and square. Hop
in the ring. Get off Twitter. Hop off Twitter. All right, time now for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away.
Mm-mm. All right, guys. So after getting outplayed by Dame Dollar for the entire series, I believe Russell Westbrook has been humbled. And it made me think, what's been the most humbling experience you guys have faced during your careers, and how did you handle it?
I think mine was coming from college, going into the pros, thinking that I was just going to run through the NFL, thinking I was going to be in a Pro Bowl every year, thinking I was going to be competing for Super Bowls every year. And then going to New Orleans my rookie year, we had a lot of success. We were one game away from the Super Bowl and ended up losing to Chicago Bears in 2006. And then the next 2 years, we was trash. And then it took us to the fourth year. We finally got there.
I could have swore you were going to come out here and say getting dumped by Kim Kardashian.
There you go.
Welcome to the party.
There you go. Speaking of stuff you don't know nothing about.
He got dumped by Tony Braxton.
You got to get dumped.
Whitlock, get Whitlock in the ring, you boy.
Right.
You're sniping right now.
The gloves,
I ain't got nothing. First I ain't never been that humble.
I ain't never been dumped, young man. Ever in my life.
Don't even defend it, bro.
Yeah, don't
it ain't it. Even. Don't buy into it. I'm gonna tell
you. Don't
do it. The humbling for me, I got humble because I never had to struggle with basketball, high school, college, whatever. But when I got hurt and tore my ankle up my third year, I'm averaging 26, I get hurt. Whew. And then from there, it changes. I get traded, I'm a free agent. You talking about hitting your ego in regards to how you respond to being here, then all of a sudden being here. And then when it really got humble, when I came to the Lakers, and I used to always say, man, I wonder what it's like not to play in the game. I came off of Phoenix playing well, came to the Lakers, guess what? I was that dude that wasn't playing.
Oh.
And I had to check my ego at the door and got real humbled, you know, from that perspective.
I got a similar story, obviously, falling down that hill.
Mm-hmm.
Man. You know, I played well to get the contract. I played well after the contract. Got hurt all the way through that process, but finally I couldn't get back up there to my level. And then I felt the drop. And I used to be the guy that walked in the locker room. I say a bad joke, dudes be dying laughing.
Finally, I'm down here. I said, good joke. They ain't even laughing. They're like, what are you damn about you, Wiley?
Who this dude?
Boy, that's like, man, you still on the squad?
Yeah. When somebody told me one time,
get your dude.
No, I ain't gonna lie. One time, the Jacksonville dude said, hey, go get my helmet for me, Wiley. I said, what? Helmet? Apple. What? Come at me.
That's when you knew.
Who you talking
that's,
to?
That's when you knew.
You better recognize
in that moment.
Hey, wait, wait. What was yours?
Just honest to goodness.
Oh,
just honest to goodness. I've had a lot of humbling experiences, a lot, but I've never been humbled.
Ooh, I get that. Wow.
We got some work to do then.
That's deep. Yeah, that's deep.
A lot of humbling experiences, but never been
It didn't humbled. Internalize yet, huh?
That's more of a joke than reality. So, I've laid in bed crying. D'Angelo Hall and Reggie Bush are back. Let's return to the NFL. Sponsored by the Spark Cash Card from Capital One. Odell Beckham Jr. has a new uniform, a new quarterback, a new head coach. But that didn't stop him from skipping voluntary workouts in Cleveland this week. It's bad optics, but Browns general manager John Dorsey seems unbothered by his absence, saying OBJ is an experienced player who understands what he has to do to put himself and his team in the best position to succeed. That's all well and good. Hey, we traded for him. We acquired him. Of course, I'm going to defend him. But this new team, new quarterback, new city, he should be at OTAs.
No, he shouldn't. And I'm not going to attack strength and conditioning coaches, but I'm going to point out in particular Larry Jackson, the coach at Cleveland, who is now at his third job in the last 3 years. Reason I'm bringing that up, because one size doesn't fit all. I remember having so many strength and conditioning coaches. Now I'm going to attack these dudes. Sorry. just former football players who knew how to squat. Yeah. Meanwhile, I go to these facilities and these centers out here, and there's PhD motion specialists and kinesiologists with masters, and I'm like, wait a minute. I'm learning more and doing better for myself out there than I am in here. So with this one-size-fit-all mentality, even NFL and NFLPA came down and told Tom Coughlin, these are voluntary. Relax on this. So I'm with OBJ. Get yourself right.
Yeah. And you got to kind of you have to know the kind of player you are, athlete you are. Us elite athletes, I say us elite athletes, like myself, Reggie. I ain't even putting Marcellus in the conversation.
Go get your helmet.
But like you said, but like you said, it's position-specific training that's getting done. And this part of the offseason, it ain't much they doing. They not really in their
chemistry.
You're right. They're building a little bit of chemistry, but the way you build chemistry in the league, it ain't by just sitting in the film room showing me that you know the words and the verbiage of this offense and defense. It's out there on the field. You can go out there on the field and you can make plays. I'm going to respect you and I'm going to follow you. And so OBJ is doing exactly what he needs to do to be at the top of his game.
And I think to add some context to it, like you alluded to, they are voluntary. And a lot of people kind of get, you know, angry that when some guys don't show up. And I do understand the side that you're talking about, the chemistry, because I do believe if the quarterback is there, that's the person that Odell should be trying to build that chemistry with. Chemistry takes time. Right? It takes years sometimes to build that winning franchise, right? And so I do think that he can do a better job by not putting his team and maybe the GM and the head coaches in positions where they have to continue to answer these kinds of questions. But as long as he's on the same page with everybody else, the coaches, and they all know where he's going to be at what time,
and we don't know what conversations he's had.
Exactly.
He's probably already said, hey, guys, I like to work out in my own space with my guys. And we know he hangs out with Baker in the offseason. They've probably been throwing for a while together. So the chemistry stuff is kind of overrated.
My position on this is just like, OBJ is a superstar, and he's got a resume that speaks for itself. Year one, though, with all this hype and pressure on the Browns, they took a real chance on acquiring him. Just year one, he could have done everybody on the, in the organization a favor by showing up for these OTAs. You're only going to miss a few days. He's going to go back and work with his specialists and all that. Year one, he could have did him a favor. Baker, the head rookie head coach.
But I don't know. Are these OTAs or just off-season workouts?
The voluntary workouts.
So they're not in OTAs.
2 hours
yet.
Of lifting, hour on the field. We can't even have contact. You got me at Applebee's at noon.
All day doing nothing
with y'all, man. Stop playing. You like the Applebee's part, though.
Before we go, I'd like to say a word or two about my Kansas City Chiefs and their affinity for troubled football players. Yesterday, a frustrated Kansas prosecutor announced
he couldn't build a strong enough case to prosecute Chiefs star receiver Tyreek Hill for child abuse. Someone broke the arm of Hill's 3-year-old son. Oh, the state removed custody of the child from Hill and the boy's mother, Hill's fiance. This is not Hill's first trouble with law enforcement. While in college, he assaulted his then pregnant fiance while she was pregnant. He punched and choked her. The Chiefs overlooked Hill's misdeeds and drafted him in the 5th round in 2016. This month, Hill reported to Kansas City's offseason training activities, with the investigation for child abuse still looming over his head, Chiefs head coach Andy Reid told reporters, "I'm not here to judge, I'm here to coach." That mindset is troubling and baffling, given the fact the Chiefs cut star running back Kareem Hunt last season after he was captured on tape in a physical altercation with a woman outside his residence in Ohio. Even more baffling, earlier this week, the Chiefs gave Seattle defensive end Frank Clark a contract worth more than $100 million. While a player at the University of Michigan, Clark accepted a plea deal after being arrested for domestic violence. Let me solve the mystery, because I've seen all of this before with the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid is showing signs of Super Bowl desperation. The same thing happened to Marty Schottenheimer late in his tenure as the Chiefs head coach. Like Reid, Schottenheimer was long considered the best coach never to win a Super Bowl. A decade into his reign as Chiefs coach, Schottenheimer stockpiled a who's who of talented, questionable characters and ex-cons to win a Super Bowl. Andre Rison, Bam Morris, Wayne Simmons, Chester McLaughlin, Tamarick Vanover, and Dale Carter. I'm still not sure how I survived covering that team without getting my brains beat in. God bless Derek Thomas and Diamond Joe for having my back. The 1998 Chiefs team imploded in bad behavior on and off the field. The season is best remembered for a Monday Night Football meltdown against the Denver Broncos. Simmons and Thomas combined for 5 personal foul penalties on a Denver touchdown drive. Schottenheimer resigned in his position at the end of the season. Desperation can make a great coach look foolish. Andy Reid needs to be careful. D'Angelo Hall and Reggie Bush are back. Let's return to the NFL draft, where John Gruden will take center stage tonight as the Raiders have 3 first-round picks, including the number 4 pick overall. There are reports Gruden isn't happy with David Carr and that he is quite enamored with Kyler Murray. If the Cardinals pass on Murray at number 1, the Niners and the Jets already have a quarterback, so Murray could fall into Gruden's lap at number 4. Should John Gruden take Kyler Murray if he falls?
I think it's simple yes for the books. You get a rookie deal, which is not the same as 25 per year for Derek Carr, and you still have a question mark about his abilities and production. And 2, which one is more captivating in terms of attention when you go to Vegas?
Like, yeah.
You got Kyler Murray at quarterback versus Derek Carr at quarterback in Las Vegas. It's a better sell. So if you got interest in him, yeah, it's going to pay dividends in a couple ways.
I think you just got to be careful with this one, because Derek Carr obviously is a seasoned veteran. And we also have seen that John Gruden does not like seasoned veterans, so to speak. And I'm reading a lot of stuff that the GM is saying. And to me, it's saying that they don't love Derek Carr. They're not all in on Derek Carr, which is why we keep talking about whether, if Kyler Murray falls, should they take him. It depends on the system that they're going to run, because if they're going to put in a system, an offensive system that fits what Kyler Murray does well, then I say yes, take him. But if you're going to try to make him a drop back quarterback, then I don't think it's going to work out at all.
Yeah, I think you should draft him. You know, we've yet to really figure out exactly what kind of offense John's going to run. The last time he was in the league, a long time ago, I remember facing some of those Tampa Bay teams, and that quarterback did kind of get out the pocket on occasions. Yeah. And you remember when they tried to get Jeff Garcia.
Yep.
And so it's, you know, I can see it working, but to me, they're not a quarterback away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, a lot more.
I don't love Derek Carr, and I'm sure they don't love Derek Carr, but there's so many other holes on that Raiders
easy
football
to fix
team.
With a rookie quarterback.
It's very easy to fix with a rookie quarterback, because like you said, that contract, if you can move Derek Carr's money out of there, and then you now can go out and get some veteran guys at some other positions, maybe not this year, but just moving forward, it clears those books. It does what I thought long-term the Raiders organization was trying to do, and that's get rid of contracts that they don't think can help them win and continue to build with young talent. So when they do go in Vegas, they're going in with a young team that's built to win.
I think that John Gruden right now is on his knees praying that the Arizona Cardinals don't take Kyler Murray. I think this is an ego play for John Gruden. I said that earlier this week. It's about his legacy. He wants to break the mold in terms of quarterback and style of play. The problem, though, I think, is Antonio Brown.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah. Antonio Brown wants to eat very bad. He needs to reestablish himself as the best wide receiver. Can he do it with a 5'10" rookie just learning how to play in the NFL? And if he can't, does Antonio Brown turn into a major headache?
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
And then also you're thinking about Kyler Murray. We just alluded to this earlier in the show that how he is still learning how to be a franchise quarterback. He's still learning. Well, if you're still learning and you maybe not getting that ball to Antonio Brown,
you don't want
he has a couple, you know, incompletions or bad throws and they lose a couple games in a row, then how is that going to affect that total package?
Maybe that's par for the course. Let's not forget last year they were calling out Carr in the locker room. Some people had to come to his defense with his leadership issues. Is he too soft? Is he too thin-skinned? Like, so I don't know if this is going to be a major downgrade if you get some new blood in there and someone who could extend the play. In today's NFL, you got to have clean books and build around a cheap quarterback. Mm-hmm. And if not, you look at him, Trent Brown and that big deal, and then Antonio Brown, like, they're building it in a weird way. Expensive, but not so talented and deep.
Very weird, and they still have the holes that they had when we started this whole thing.
Pass rusher.
Yes. Defense, pass rush, just pokes right out at the top of my list.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, Kyler Murray is so special. He is so special of a player.
But let's
I think John can get it right with him.
Let's remember who Antonio Brown has been playing with. A guy that will throw you the ball in traffic.
No matter what.
Tiniest windows. Hey, you're going to make a play, AB. You know, and that's it takes a veteran to have that sort of mentality.
Can I bring up the Dak Prescott and Dez Bryant? This is what killed Dez. Dez was getting 50-50 balls from Tony Romo because Tony Romo was franchise quarterback. All of a sudden, they give me a rookie, and guess what? The rookie ain't taking 50-50 chances. Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. He's trying to play himself into some money. Yeah. So I got to take safe bets. And Dez is sitting there like, y'all talking about I can't separate. This is what I do. Well, I battle for the ball in the air, the aerial assault. Yeah. So be careful with that.
Yeah, and it's not even safe bets. It's just he doesn't like throwing that kind of ball. You talk about Dak Prescott. Mm. It was the same problem we had with Kirk Cousins. We went out and drafted a guy, Josh Dotson, as a receiver who wasn't going to separate. And so he was a 50-50 ball kind of guy. Kirk didn't like to throw 50-50 balls.
Yeah.
So you think he's not a good player, he's just not getting that opportunity. Yeah.
Uncle Jimmy's here. As a, you're a superhero now, huh?
I'm a true Captain America. Don't you ever get it twisted.
Got any thoughts on the show so far? Who's Captain America? Who's your big dummy of the day?
Well, first of all, my big dummy of the day is the person that sat here and told the world, I ain't never been humbled. I've been in humble situations, but I ain't never been humbled.
Yeah.
That's spoken like a true dummy.
All right, here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Kyler Murray. I'm not convinced Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray wants the responsibility of being a franchise NFL quarterback.
No person in sports history has ever had the two industries of baseball and football weighing on him. Some flags up. I don't want to say bright red, but certainly a little slight concern.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, you heard our conversation about Kyler Murray, and I don't think he wants the responsibility of being a franchise quarterback. What's your take?
I think right now, if I may, I'm going to try to talk to Merkulis because we ain't going to talk to him.
You ain't going to talk to him?
You from Compton. You from the Screech.
Yeah, no. Yeah,
5 for $20. What they say on the Screech?
You going back.
Hey, yeah. You get caught with 5 grams, you get 20 years. Am I right?
I've heard it, but I mean, you act like I lived it.
No, just roll with me, man. Come on.
What's your
point? Okay,
look
Captain.
Here, bro. I'm just saying that's the word on the street.
Right.
And what they tell you, you get caught, you do the crime, you got to do the time.
3 hots and a cat.
Hey, bro, Uncle Jimmy did the crime. I did my time. I served my, I did my 5. I had to do my 20.
What's your point? What?
I did 5 years of ecstasy and had to serve 20 years of child support. I did 5 minutes of ecstasy and had 20 years of child support. The court deemed me what they called an habitual criminal. I was a repeat committer. Boy, when Bill Clinton came in talking about that 3 strikes, you out. Bro, Uncle Jimmy was shook. I came out the door with 5 strikes. I had 5 kids, 5 ex-wives, and 15 stepkids. At least 3 of them wasn't mine. Y'all seen me on board. Murray, y'all know them wasn't my kids.
You ain't claiming them. You better claim them kids.
So you like responsibility, huh?
Uncle, I'm going to be honest. Uncle Jimmy is what they call the true definition of insanity. I keep doing the same thing, looking for a different result.
That's true.
You didn't have your shield with you then, huh?
Hey, I didn't. Hey, I ain't got no problem with responsibility.
Keep your shield with you.
I ain't scarred.
Oh, you think I'm scared? That's it. I'm not scared.
Nah, just not only are you scared, you scary. That's why you boo-booed on yourself until you were in fourth grade.
He was having too much fun.
You said yourself that a man's only as good as his options.
Yeah.
Hey, don't hate me because I'm beautiful, bro. Hey, ladies love him some Uncle Jimmy.
Here we go.
They see me, meet me, greet me, want to marry me. Hey, man, what can I say, man? I was cursed with the nectar of the gods. It ain't my fault. Hey, God beat Uncle Jimmy with a pretty stick. I was blessed.
He only hit you.
Boned it.
He hit you.
He gave me all of that. My seed is strong. I come from a group of great swimmers. You mad because your seeds is a bunch of bottom dwellers. I'm just telling you, that's your problem.
That's my problem, huh?
Yeah.
Do you have a point about Kyler Murray? Can you talk about Kyler Murray?
Bring it home.
Man, that ain't none of my kid. I don't know what the hell you talking about. Just because we both short? Hell, you and Darnell weigh the same thing. Is that your son?
What? We weren't suggesting Kyler was your son, man. Do you have nothing to say about Kyler?
Notcha.
He's not my son. I ain't do it. Notcha. I ain't never been to Oklahoma. It's four hours south on 35. But I ain't never been there.
Let me get to my approval rating on Kyler Murray.
Some big girls out there. Big girls in Oklahoma.
I've got him at a 69. I've dropped him 7 points. Ooh. Down 2 in job performance.
That man ain't skipped never stepped on the field.
Skipped a charity event.
Yeah.
Down 5 in authenticity. He skipped a charity event. And I didn't like the Nike commercial.
Yeah.
69.
Nike commercial, probably drafted number 1 overall and a Heisman winner. I still got you at GOAT status, but it's a leaner GOAT than before. I had to drop you. You can't miss out on the charity. Good excuse, though. I wasn't even in the city. But bad excuse, because you should have been in the city to go to the damn charity event. But all that said, 81, GOAT status.
Maybe still got him at a GOAT, huh?
Number 1, maybe, man. And Heisman? What you going to do?
What happens tonight, he goes for
it. I'll see y'all tonight.
They drop it.